All right, turn, please, with me to the book of Ephesians once again. We're getting pretty close to, actually, we're ending a section tonight. All right, here we go. All right, now, there's some Greek in here, but I'll help you with that, and we'll do some translation first of all. It's simpler for me this way, and trust we'll make it, but... But let me illustrate something for you. If you recall, chapter 1 and verse 18, Paul begins a prayer. He says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened. Why, he says? So that three things, notice. So that you might know. What is the hope of his calling? I remind you again, notice, not we're so self-centered. We think, look at this, and the immediate thought is the hope of our calling, but it's not the hope of his calling. What are the riches of the glory, not of our inheritance, but the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints? So what he does, he looks back to the hope. He looks forward to the inheritance. All right? But in the middle, with the present, this is the past, okay, this is the future. Now in the present, notice what happens. He says, and what is the surpassing greatness of his power toward us who believe? So what he puts here in the present is power. Now that's the present. Hope is the past. Glory of the inheritance, the future. Power in the present. Now, What is significant here, he picks up on this one thought. This, by the way, now becomes the thought that controls everything that follows through chapter 3 and verse 21. For you see, first of all, he will define the power manifested in the resurrection. I'll say resurrection, ascension, exaltation. I will take it, okay, of Christ. Now, it's important we see this because it is not just that God raised him from the dead. That's not enough. Notice the power. The power here, I mean, yes, we don't comprehend it. Even we looked at it this morning. It is the power that he brought about in Christ when he raised him from the dead. That's not enough, though. Seat him at his right hand in the heavenly place. That's not enough. Far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come, he put all things in subjection under his feet and gave him his head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. So he does this in 1:19 through the end of the chapter. What is it, 20? Somebody help me, 23? Yes. Okay. Then in 2:1 through 10, the power that was manifested not only in the raising of Christ, but in the raising of us spiritually. And again, what the connecting thought is that just as God raised him from the dead, God raised us from the dead. And so you notice the same verbs are used exactly. Verse 4 of chapter 2, but God being rich in his mercy because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our transgressions, made us alive with Christ. And he raised us up with him, and he seated us with him. I mean, all the exaltation of Christ is our exaltation. So you see that there's that. Now, and then in 2:11 to 22, he says, whether Jew, we'll do it, whether, here we go, Jew or Gentile. Now, it's interesting because the point I want to make here is that he has three different things, but this is what he is going to concentrate on in this entire section and build off of, right? And this is what he does all the way through to the end of chapter 3 and verse 20, where he says, now to him who is able to do exceeding abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, notice, according to this power that works within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus to all generations forever and ever. Amen. So, the point, now you see this, where there are three things, but he builds on the one and carries on with that. Now, it is a very similar thing that faces us when we come here to this section because, and we will do the broader context in just a moment, but let me do the more immediate context just so that we sense this. You see, what happens is, go with me to chapter 5 and verse 15. Therefore, be careful how you walk. Now we should talk about this, and maybe we'll do this. We'll do the broader context, okay? You understand, by the way, we have three watchmen needs divide the book up into sit, walk, and stand. Sit is the first three chapters. Walk is these chapter 4, 1 through 5, 6, 9, and then 6, 10, and following stand. Now, walking. 4, 1. Now we start with 4, 1 where he says, walk worthy of your calling. Now what's interesting, by the way, with this one, okay, I just so that we do this, okay, walk worthy. And this is what we call aorist tense. Now, just don't get carried away with the grammar, but understand something. This is the overriding statement. It's just do it, okay? You know what the aorist tense is? Aorist tense is the Nike tense, right? What's the Nike theme, right? Just do it. See, that's aorist. Do it. See, that's all it is, okay? Not be continuously doing, just do it, all right? Now, what happens is there are four sections, well, at least, okay, 4:17, he comes back to walk again, present tense this time. And let's see if I can think of a positive thing. He says, don't walk like the Gentiles. So let's say walk, let's see, give me a positive, not like the world. Walk, Well, but it's different than that because it's walk, don't walk like the Gentiles walk. Don't walk like the world, so walk unworldly. Right, let's try that way. Okay, I'll do this so I can keep it in a positive mode, okay? 4:17, don't walk as Gentiles. Now, 5:2. 5:2, walk like Christ in love. And the issue is this: walk in love. Walk like Christ, walk in love. 5:8. Notice when he comes to 5:8, he says, walk in the light. Okay? Walk in light. Now, when it comes here to 5:15, he has the last of these walks, and it's walk carefully. Now that is the issue. I mean, that's really what it is. Walk carefully, okay? Now, all of these walks are under this walk here. So how we walk worthy. You cannot walk worthy unless you are walking unlike the world. Just reflecting on that this morning, I wanted to build on that a bit, but isn't it true? They say we want a king just like everybody else. We want CEOs just like everybody else. We want, I mean, seriously, we want boards just like, I mean, don't we want to be just like everybody else? And you see what happens is God's way is not good enough for us, so therefore we need to go borrow from man to try to figure, don't we? We do. I do. So you see, don't walk like the world. To do this, so we this way, walk in love, walk in light, walk carefully. Now, in under walking carefully, he has three negative, okay, number one, negative, positive, number two, negative, positive, number three, negative, positive, here we go. Now, let us do them, because this is in verse 15, this is in verse 17, this is in verse 18. Verse 16 is a parenthesis in here, all right? It is. Okay, watch. Verse 15, if I'm going to walk carefully, I'm going to walk like a wise person, not an unwise person, right? Yes? I mean, that's what verse 15 says, right? So not like an unwise person, but like a wise person. Verse 17, not what? Not what in verse 17? Not foolish, right? But understanding what the will of the Lord is. So see what I'm doing? Not unwise, but wise. Not foolish, but understanding the will of the Lord, right? Third negative, not drunk by wine, but filled by the Spirit. Now you see, okay, understand something. All of these things, by the way, are all back up here, walking like the world, walking like the world. The world walks foolishly. The world walks, you know, without understanding, the world walks in its drunkenness and so forth. We walk in wisdom. We understand the will of God. We are filled by the Spirit. Those are the things, the positive sides of where we are. All of those things are the same. I mean, a person who walks by the Spirit is a wise person. A person who walks by the Spirit of God is understanding what the will of the Lord is. In fact, that is the will of the Lord, is it not? See? Now, with that in mind now, are you with me here so far? We're all right here? Yes? All right. Now let me get this off of here, because now I want to build off this last one. See, he's going to, why I took you back the other, see, there are three things: the hope, the inheritance, power. It is not that the hope isn't important, it's not that the inheritance isn't important, it's just that the power is the most important, see, for his consideration there. Not that these other things aren't important, but this last one is what's really important, and he wants to build off of this being filled by the Spirit. So that's what he will do. All right, now, that is where what you have in front of you begins, all right? All of this is background for us for this reason. Okay, now watch. Now, we understand, now, I would have adjusted it, but you just bear with me, see? We have up here, this box up here, this is 518, and what you can write over here is be continuously, wherever you spell it, continuously, however it is, continuously filled. Not with the Spirit, by the way, but by the Spirit, okay? Now, that's what's up there in that box up at the top, from which all of these five arrows come, see? Are you with me? So far, so good. See, so all of this thing is controlled by this statement: be filled by the Spirit of God. Now, there are five what we call participles, all of them present, so all of them continuous. The first one over here is speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, okay? The next one is singing. You can put ing on the end. This next one is making, we'll use making melody, or if you will, just if you follow the thing, psalming, okay? If you like that, that's not a bad word. And then here is thanking, being thankful, okay? Here we go, thanking, ing. And here is being submissive, okay? So those are five things that if I'm filled by the Spirit of God, I do. I speak to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. I sing. I make melody. I give thanks. I am submissive in whatever areas that I am to be submissive. Those five things grow out of that statement up above, being filled by the Spirit. Now, there is, just like we saw with that hope, power, and inheritance, he's going to just pick one of them, and just this one here, and he's going to bring it down here and says, all right, now, I want to talk about this submissive business for a while, and so let me discuss it, and that becomes now the issue of everything that follows up through the situation of standing firm and fighting against or rearranging yourself against the devil in chapter 6, verse 10. So all the way now from 5:18, all the way down through chapter 6 and verse 9, is all together. All of them under this title here of being submissive. And so you say, how do we define this? Very simple, let him define it. We talk about exegesis in church 2 weeks ago. We said it comes from the word exago. That is to these two words, okay? The word ex, we get exit from. Ex, and we'll put exit on here so you do it. And ago, which is to lead. So this word ex means out of, and this is to lead. So I'm leading out of. And so we want to draw out of the text what it says. We don't want to read into it. We want to draw out of it. Isn't it nice, though? I mean, I don't know why we can make this book so complicated. Isn't it nice that it's just here, and anybody can read it, and anybody can apply the truth, and you don't need to be a theologian to do this stuff. You just don't need to be. You read it. In fact, I'll tell you why I make it a point. When I am in my personal devotions, I read out of the English text only. I don't have any other books because I want to do just what everybody else says. I want to just sit down there and I say to God, please just talk to me, right? I don't want to worry about whether this is a aorist tense or whether this is a hiphil or a hithpile. That doesn't matter. What does English say to me, right? What does God say? I want the conviction to come directly to me, right to my heart. I want to be moved and stirred by this. Isn't it a refreshing thought that anybody can come here? You see, it's a common text from which we can all, therefore, assess each other. I mean, it's not like just a few people have the rules and nobody else has them. Isn't that not a refreshing? I think it's a refreshing thought. But anyhow, whatever, back to this. But the big problem isn't understanding this so much as just what? Just obeying it or responding to it is our problem. Okay, now, with this in mind, by the way, we're down to this. And we see three areas, okay? First of all, a marriage, okay, no doubt. The marriage, and we'll talk about parenting, or we'll talk about that at work, okay? But we can talk about the family, however you want to do it. But I don't want to separate this because really this is a part of the family too. These household slaves, well, let me put this. You know, I'm going to use this word. I'm going to use this word because it is in there, by the way. It is the direct translation, slaving. I like that. I'm going to put it in there, but serving was, well, you probably rather. It sounds not better, and it doesn't seem so bad. Okay, so serving will work. Okay, serving. Or, if you'd rather, working, it will work, anything you wish. Now, those are the things, and that's that first sheet of paper. And this is pretty good, by the way, pretty good picture of that all. If it was totally of myself, I wouldn't make such a statement, but it's very well done. Okay, now, go with me to then the next one, okay, the overview for the children and parents. Don't want to do too much of this, but just to look, if you will, at. I want to show you something. If you take the next two sheets of paper, I want you to see something. Do you see, look it down, you see, first of all, if you look on 6:1 to 4, you've got this section, 6:1 to 3, children obey your parents, right? You look at the one next to it, which is the 6:5 night slaves. So you can see children highlight on one, slaves highlight on the other. So the first part, the top of the page, are the ones who are to submit and what they're supposed to do. The bottom of the page, notice if you will, in both cases, you have fathers highlighted and masters highlighted, okay? Now, what I want you to see something is the translation is very well done here. See, in 6:4 it has and in 6:9 it has and, right? No. Why it's important. It's a simple word. Let me just put it for you on here, because it's a simple Greek word, this one, right? It's just simple and. It is this, K-A-I, all right, Kai. Now, why that's important? It's not a but, it's an and. And you know why it's so important is because the relationship of parent to children is or fathers, in this case, I should say, to children, is an and relationship. It is, in other words, is very, the father's response to the children is very, very closely tied to the children's response to the parents. It's not but, it's an and. It's because it is so intimately connected. How I respond to my children is so intimately connected to how they respond to me. It's an and. I don't know how else to tell you, but it's very, very crucial that they're very close to each other. By the same token, when you look at the same thing, if you had your Greek text and look at it, the same thing is true when you come to the and masters. You see it's and again, because very, very close relationship between master's response to slaves and the slave's response to the masters. Now, I am going to spend, and then you can have these and just take them home because it's a very good structure of this section. But you know, it is interesting in this section, and again, I would remind you from the second page, which is the one on the parent-child one. The interesting thing about the parent-child one is the children are to obey their parents this way, that's fine, in honor. And by the way, honor takes you a step beyond obey. It is obeying is the one thing where you just do what you need to do because this is the right thing to do. But honoring takes you a step beyond that. By the way, you remember Jesus' words? He is talking to the Pharisees. He says, you know, you guys, you're such sticklers on the law. And yet, you know, that law that came honor your father and your mother. And you know what you've done? Your father and mother are retired. And they're broke. Well, they're living on the tight edge of things. But you say to your parents, you know what, I'm sorry I can't help you because all my money is korban. I've given it to God. So therefore, because it's dedicated to God, I can't help you. He says, you know what, you violated the law of God. Any child who does not help take care of his parents is violating the law of God to honor. Honor goes beyond obey. Honor is honor, and honor is something that doesn't end. And by the way, there's no doubt about this. When you talk about children to parents, the word is not the word that has to do with the youngest child. But in this context, you can tell he's dealing with younger children because he's talking about bringing them up and so forth like that. So it would suggest that they're younger children. But certainly the relationship of children honoring the parents is not something that stops when they turn 21. But now notice. When it comes now down to the fathers, the important part with the fathers is do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And by the way, good translation that way because the discipline and instruction, the word, the first of those words, but anyhow, first of all, don't be provoking. And it could be translated, stop provoking your children to anger. Now, you know, it is one of those, this is not... You withhold their name from the will, and that makes them angry. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about the daily things around the house. You know, and by the way, it is not like our present generation. There's a problem with the present generation. There was an English couple that visited this country, and when they were leaving, someone says, "What was your impression?" And the one impression they had was this. They were so impressed with how well the parents obeyed their children. Now, I'm serious, because, you know, we live in a society where with a sense of make sure you don't ruffle the children or get, you know. But this is not talking about that. This is talking about where you're exasperating your kids. There's no way they can ever live up to the standard you have for them, right? I said it in the right tone of voice, I think. My son can tell you, but it's all right. I can now react because I have the mic, but it was many, many years ago. And so he came home. Actually, it could have been this last semester, couldn't it, Scott? But it was many years ago. He came home, and he had all A's but one B plus or something like that. So you know a father's got to say it. He just has to say it, right? I mean, why not? This time I said you ought to go talk to the teacher who gave you a B plus and ask him why. Then I said, hold it. You know what? I mean, father's got to say this, doesn't he? I said, how come you couldn't get an A in that other one, see? I mean, somehow, okay, you understand the point. Do you get the place where they can never do well enough? See, if you get A's, why not A pluses? Or if you do it one semester, why can't you do it the next? You know, somehow those, I think, undue expectations that somehow can say to a child, can I never do right without this, or do I have to do this to please you? Or they can be the sense of where we get exasperated with them and therefore cause them to respond to us that way because of our exasperation. Now, whatever it is, we leave it at this, but the interesting point of this is that it's the fathers who are addressed. And again, I read some works where they say that, you know, what this is both parents and so forth. You know why I don't buy that? It is because you have parents in verse 1. If you wanted parents down here, you could have parents down here, see? I don't think he's talking about, although it's true. I mean, for a wife to say, well, this doesn't apply to me, so they're not. And by the way, I told you that. He said, oh, it's just a friend of mine who felt that this should be parents because he says wives do more to provoke their children to anger, he says, in all my years of counseling than fathers ever do. I don't know that, but that's what he said, and I guess he would know. But the point isn't even about that. It's about the role that the fathers play in the responsibility in the home. I cannot emphasize this enough. Too many fathers abdicate their responsibility. And the role here is to let the fathers know that they have a grave responsibility, and that it is theirs, ultimate responsibility. If you will, as we saw this morning, to prohisteme, to stand before their home. They should be the models. They should be setting the standard. They should be protecting the family. They should be leading the family in worship and leading the family in their service of God. It is the fathers who are to do so and therefore brought out here. And as we said, the common denominator through all of this certainly is that father, because he is the husband of the wife in verse 22 and following. He is the father of the children here in verses 6, chapter 6, 1 to 4. He is the master of the slaves in verses 5 to 9. So he is the issue. Now, go with me to the last page. And I want to concentrate on four basic things let me show you something. See in the middle the motivation in the top part for slaves and the motivation for the masters. Now you see it has knowing, ing word. I would say to students, you can't get away with that anymore, but we can get away with it here, but you can't get away with that. This is what we call a causal participle, right? You know causal participles, right? Causal participle. And so therefore we should translate it because we know. Because we know that we will receive back from the Lord up above. Because we know that we have a master in heaven. Because we know. Now let me go back. Let me talk to you about servants to masters. And understand that I have a figure that's something. Let me find the figure so that I will quote it directly. But it's interesting because there are some statements that there were, in some parts of the empire, over 50% of the population were slaves. Another figure I have, 60 million. This is what a figure I have here, 60 million slaves in the Roman Empire. That's a massive number of slaves. Now it's not at all comparable to the situation in this country. It just isn't. It isn't about that. And in fact, the role of the slaves, it was when you went to war and you conquered somebody, you took their people as slaves. That's what it was. And if they conquered you back, you became the slave. It's as simple as that. And slaves were teachers and accountants and doctors, and they drove the middle class out of business. There was no, you couldn't, it was almost better to be a slave than to be a freedman at that time trying to make a living, because you'd be down at the bath and someone says, boy, I'm having trouble doing my taxes this year. Well, you know what? I have, okay, we call him Aristarchus, whatever. I have this slave Aristarchus, and I'll send him over to you. He'll do your bookkeeping for you. I mean, why in the world not? Well, your wife's not well. I have a doctor. I'll send him over. So you see, it was a different role. It wasn't like, it wasn't like here, but it was slaves. Now, the other side to that, though, and the very strong side about being slaves was, never in any of the writings of Paul does he get in the business of defending the cause of slavery or speaking against the cause of slavery. That wasn't the point. And what also is significant here is that when he is addressing these people, children or slaves, what you need to understand is that this is a letter read in a congregation, okay? And what's beautiful about this, it puts the children, it puts the wives, it puts the slaves on an equal level. There's no separate level in the church. Everybody has their response to God, no matter who you are. So he is. They're all here. The slaves are here. The children are here. The parents are here. Everybody's here listening to this read, and these are words directly to them. But what is significant here? Leaving aside the slavery issue per se, you see, I'm on the top of the page, and see what it says. Amplification. It says a fourfold description, each with an. And if you don't like that Greek word, put as phrase. Okay. As. Now go to the other side and look at where the as's are in italics. How are we supposed to work? Four as phrases. As to Christ. Let me go down to the third one. As slaves of Christ. Fourth one. As to the Lord. As to Christ. As slaves of Christ, as to the Lord. Now let's go back and pick up the not one. Not as eye service, men pleasers, if you will. Now, this is something that has become a major concern to my soul. I hear this word. See, bantered around and I understand in a way, but I don't understand this word. And you'll let me say it. Accountability, see. And you do this because you're being held accountable, and people need to be held accountable. So you have these meetings, and someone says, did you read your Bible this morning? I'm just holding you accountable. Did you pray this morning? I'm just holding you accountable. Accountable. I want to make sure you do it right. Did you witness this last week? I'm just holding you accountable. This stuff doesn't impress me a whole bunch. In fact, the matter is, it sort of does the other for me. Do you know why we're supposed to do it in Scripture and it keeps coming up over and over again? Not because people are watching, but because He is watching. Now, you've watched this, okay? It's amazing. In fact, the matter is, there was a man who used to inspect in the Los Angeles school district, and he said, I notified the teachers before I came because I wanted them, see? I wanted them to be at the top of their game because they knew I was coming in to see them, and I didn't want to just surprise them. Do you know what? You shouldn't teach any different, whether, right? Whether you are surprised or not surprised, it should always be the same. He says the last thing should be because you see, as a slave, that sense that, you know, I will work harder because the master standing watching me, but let him go away and the quality is going to let down. This isn't about slaves, it's about anybody. The quality should never let down because somebody's not watching, right? Somehow, it seems to me, you see, when we have lost the sense of the higher accountability, we now bring a lower accountability into play. And it seems to me someone said, when we have lost, we begin to make images of Christ that we can see when we've lost the image of Christ in our hearts, see. It is true, you see, when you've lost that sense of why a servant should serve the master the way they do is with these as's, because they're doing it as to Christ, because they're doing it as to the Lord, because they're doing it as slaves of Christ, not slaves of these masters. And the last reason that should ever motivate anybody to do is because somebody's watching me. The other side to this. And you see, notice the as you see here, the motivation again, you see, because we know what? Because we know what? We will receive back from the Lord, whether it's free, slave or free. Doesn't matter. See, not now with the leveling ground, it doesn't matter whether slave or free. You see, it's God who's going to recompense us. We don't work for man's recompense. You know what would be the greatest of all worlds in reality, see? I do think so. If somehow those who served never did it for what they could get, for two sides, because there's the sense, and I've struggled with this for years, not in a personal way, because it doesn't matter to me. I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about the principle, see? And therefore, in this body, we've made a point. We will not let any elders look on anybody that they give money to as an employee. This is not going to happen. We've had people say, well, in fact, they reflect upon me, say, you know what, you're not a very good manager, because if they were working for me, this is what they'd have to do. And I say, yeah, but they're not working for you, or they're not working for me. They're working for the Lord, and I want them to understand that. And I want them to be motivated not by the fact I'm watching them, but by the fact he is watching them. You know the other side of this body? I'm looking at men out here right now who are giving hours and hours of service and getting nothing from this body financially, see? But that's not why they work, see? We don't work to serve man. We work to serve God, and in essence to serve man in our serving of God. Do we not? I mean, the issue is here. And so somehow it should never be because somebody's watching. We don't do service as men pleasers, we do it as slaves of Christ, as to the Lord, as to Christ. I'm going to cross-reference now. It's not a good thing to do, but I'm going to cross-reference. For if I seek to please men, I will no longer be the servant of Christ. That is a hard thing for people to fathom. And you see, by the way, a lot of churches like paying people because that way then they can hold them accountable to do, and that's not what it's all about, see? I think of the missionaries who go off in this body. They don't get paid by the churches where they serve, do they? Not a nickel. But you know what? That doesn't inhibit them from giving everything they've got over there and working hard, sometimes too hard, trying to keep the ministry happening, right? Why? Because they're paid. No, they're doing it not. And, you know, we can't see what they're doing. Look at how many miles away they are. We can't be over there watching them. So they're not doing it because we're watching. They're doing it because he is watching. Now, by the way, it's a play on words. When you go down to verse 9, see the word masters, and the purposefully we've got master here, because the word Lord and master is the same word, see? See, masters, you do the same, giving up threatening, because both their master and yours is in heaven. There's no impartiality with him. See, we know that we have a master. And so you function with the same hard attitude towards those slaves as those slaves function in hard attitude. It doesn't mean be submissive to the slaves. That's not what it says, but have the same hard attitude toward the slaves as the slaves have towards you, because you understand your accountability is in heaven, not down here. Well, exciting truths. Exciting, exciting, exciting truths. And by the way, I love this thing, give up threatening. It just is, you know, I think probably slaves, masters, parents, children, that would be, if you don't do this, you know, and these threats that you're never going to keep anyhow, so better not make them, but, you know, if you do this, we'll ground you for a month. You get so tired of them after about a week, you want to get them out of the house, so you break it, okay, but anyhow, better not to do this. All right, enough of that. This is exciting. Okay, we go back to walking worthy, walking carefully, not unwise but wise, not foolish but understand the will of the Lord, not drunk with wine but filled by the Spirit, and out of that comes speaking and singing and making melody and giving thanks and submitting. And that's in the context of the marriage, in the context of the home, in the context of the slave-master relationship. And thus, we have come to the end of walking. And next week, we come to the great, great passage. Stand, having done all to stand, standing against the devil. By the way, significant it is. We'll talk about this next week. Significant that just after a long section on submission, you come to the opposition of the devil. It is also significant that when Peter concludes his epistle and he comes after the submission, last submission section, once again he comes to watch out for the devil. I will tell you, the devil, the last thing he wants the believers to do and the church to do and Christians to do is live this way toward each other. He just doesn't want it. He'll break. He's doing it. He's looking. He's breaking up marriages. He's breaking up families. He's breaking up churches. He flat out loves it. And we think, it's funny, we think, you see, we're doing our own thing and we have a right to this. We're just letting the devil control, and he is having the time of his life. It is amazing. It's absolutely astounding. By the way, just got notice from a former student who was serving God, been serving faithfully in a church down in South Africa. And he was gone, whether on vacation or what, I don't know. But when he got back, the leaders had taken over the church and given him his papers. So he's out planting another church. It is amazing. It doesn't matter where in the world you are, my friend. It's all the same stuff going on.